Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
The Cowboys, you can't stand. And to this day, the Sizemores and the Billy Bradleys and the Tom Lukens and the Franklin Masters, we text message one another. We usually end up with our text messages, Dallas still sucks. You know, that's how we felt.
And our guest this week is former Eagles linebacker, former head coach at Division III Rowan University down in Glassboro, John Bunting. And John, thanks so much for taking the time.
Pleasure to be with you, Matt.
So tell us first, what are you doing these days?
Well, right now I am enjoying my last few days here in the state of Maine. We have a residence in Florida, which is my winter hangout. And we have a place up here, a cabin up here in Maine, that's just a pleasure to be here in the summertime, get away from the heat and the humidity down there in Florida. We've been coming up here for over 30 years. My uncle and grandfather built two cabins side by side. My brother's in one, I'm in the other. And we just love it here in the summertime. And we're in countdown mode. We stayed up here few extra days because of the fact that we're going to be driving through Philadelphia, visiting with my children, my grandchild, and going into the Glassboro State Rowan Hall of Fame on, I guess it's Sunday, October 24th. So we stayed up here a little bit extra, and it is cold inside this cabin.
You mentioned that Hall of Fame. You know, what does that mean to you, getting inducted at a place where you really had a ton of success?
Well, I'm following my wife. She went in, I think, 2003, 2004, she is going to be going with me. I got a few inside stories on her that I will reveal when I speak at the induction. So it should be some fun. I loved my time at Glassboro State. I was very honored to be inducted and will be that way forever. I had probably, Matt, the best time I ever had coaching at Glassboro State Rowan. It just was fun. And there's a reason behind that. And I finally figured it out. It's D3 ball. So my coaching staff averaged getting $1,500 for the season to coach. I had one full-time assistant who also coached another sport and also taught classes. I was the first full-time coach that they ever hired. And, you know, the players They played for free. They played because they loved to play the game of football. So, comparing it to my final job as a coach, coaching my alma mater, the University of North Carolina, you're dealing with high-paid coaches who are always looking for the next job. You're dealing with players that have been pampered and have been lied to at times and have been recruited for at least a couple of years. And they have egos. And so you get to deal with that. And there was only one place that I would ever do that, and that was at my alma mater. And I got to do it. And we had the biggest wins the school's ever had, but we also did not win enough. So we went down, and, it was fun to be at Glassboro. It was an honor to coach at my alma mater. But, hey, right now I'm in a good place. I'm retired. I'm trying to stay healthy, which is, that's a full-time job when you're 70-plus years old and you played 13 years on the Veterans Stadium AstroTurf.
Ain't that the truth? So growing up, I think you were born in Maine, but you grew up outside of D.C., Silver Spring. Am I correct?
That is absolutely correct, yes.
So growing up, were you a football all the time kid, or did you play whatever was happening in the area, in the neighborhood, whatever was in season?
We played neighborhood ball, football, but I didn't even play varsity football until I was in 11th grade. Football was my favorite sport. And I played baseball, played basketball. It had some success in both of those sports, but football was my favorite. Springbrook High School in Silver Spring, Maryland is where I played. Got recruited by many schools, including Maryland, which I thought I would probably go there. Got some interest from some Big Ten schools. Visited Virginia, the University of Virginia, and visited NC State. Visited a few other schools. But when I got to Chapel Hill and met Coach Dooley, Bill Dooley, I knew that's where I wanted to go. And, they were an up-and-coming program that Dooley had been in charge for a couple of years. They had not had a winning season. And before I left North Carolina, we had not only had a winning season and gone to a bowl game my junior year, we won the ACC championship my senior year. So a lot of fun, a lot of excitement. I was married at 19 years old with a child down there. So I made it a little bit harder on myself, but I'm grateful for my experience there, grateful for my child that was born there. And hey, it's all good.
So you say you didn't play varsity till junior year. What click? Because that seems like a very quick move. You're not playing varsity till you're a junior, but you're getting this high level college attention. Was it just a matter of the opportunity? Did you have a growth spurt? What kind of led to that quick transition to a higher level recruit, higher level athlete?
Well, growing up in the D.C. area, of course, I was a Washington Redskins fan, and they were horrible. They never won. I was fortunate enough to hang with a bunch of athletes. That's who I hung out with. That's part, I think, of growing up. Who are your friends, and what do they believe in? What are their beliefs? And I had a bunch of great friends that loved sports. And so we played basketball. We played, we played out in the street. We played down at Springbrook High School. We challenged other neighborhoods to play football. So we had a lot of fun. But I had a growth spurt between 9th and 10th grade where I probably went from like 5'8 to about 6'1 and went from about, 135 pounds to about 170 pounds, 175 pounds. So I continued to get some good growth. I had some really good coaches in high school. And we didn't win a championship there, but I think because of the fact that I was playing both ways, fullback and linebacker, and having success, a graduate assistant at the University of North Carolina is the one that so-called discovered me. And he was an incredible recruiter. I got a letter from him twice a week, handwritten letter. So I started leaning towards North Carolina because of the attention that I was getting from that graduate assistant. And then when Bill Dooley came to Springbrook High School, sat in a classroom with me, I knew it was over. And of course, at the time, a freshman could not compete at the varsity level. So I had a freshman class of about 40 some on scholarship. And by the time I graduated from North Carolina in 1971, last football season, there's 12 of those guys left. So Bill Dooley not only recruited talent, he wanted guys to be very tough. And we were put through the ringer to compete and learn how to compete at a higher level and really, really take all of our energy and work habits to another level.
Your success at North Carolina leads you to get drafted by the Eagles, not till the 10th round in 72. Did you think you were going to be drafted? Were you surprised? Were you disappointed it was that late? I mean, the draft's a different animal then than it is now. But what was your thought process once your college career was over?
You know, 17 rounds back in the day. So there was 3 days of drafting, and I never expected to go on the first day. And I don't remember how many rounds they covered. But, you know, I thought that there was a chance I might get drafted. And here's probably the reason why I got drafted by the Eagles. We played Notre Dame in South Bend my senior year, and I had a stellar day. We didn't win the game, but I had 19 tackles in that game, and supposedly a Philadelphia Eagles scout was there. So was all ACC. It was not an All-American, none of that stuff. But I had a really good senior year. So anybody that came and watched tape would see that I knew how to play the game. I was a study aholic. I loved to study the game. I had a great linebacker coach that taught me how to study tape. So I was able to make a lot of plays and have success. 10th round pick, traveled to Philadelphia for the first time in my life. I'm in a taxi cab going across the bridge there. And there's all these smoke and flames coming out of the oil refineries. And I'm going, what kind of a place am I going to now? A taxi driver drove me around, drove me by Penn. And when I lined up at practice the first day of mini camp, I was sixth string. There was at least 15 linebackers, and I was way down the list. But as things happened in training camp that year, I got opportunities and took advantage of those opportunities. And all of a sudden, we're playing Dallas Cowboys in Dallas, Texas on opening day. And Adrian Young, who was playing in front of me, not a popular player with the staff. He was a little bit of a misfit of a guy. He told me prior to the game, he goes, "This will be my last game." What do you mean? He goes, "They don't like me." I got to play in the second half of the game, played well. Adrian Young was cut the next week, and I became the starter.
I mean, that happens so quickly. You know, does it feel natural, or is your head swimming trying to keep up with everything? Where are you, like, mentally at that point?
Matt, I would tell you this right now. I was swimming big time in the head. At North Carolina, our defense was designed to stop option football, which is what a lot of people did, particularly in the Southeast Conference back in the day. And Bill Dooley came out of the Southeast Conference, and a lot of our teams had option football. And, you know, it was basically you line up and you have a responsibility to either take the back on the option play or take the quarterback on the option, one or the other. That was basically it. Pass coverage, we didn't get involved. All of a sudden, I'm playing against Dallas and Tom Landry's offense that is so varied in terms of everything that they do, personnel groups, formations. I've never seen someone. I had no idea how to declare strength and what would happen if a guy went in motion. So I was totally swimming, and took me, I'm going to say at least 2 years to start to figure it out. Our head coach, Eddie Kayat, was fired after that first year. As I said, I started the next game against the New York Giants. I was taken out of the game because I could not make plays like I had done prior and practiced well. But I was swimming. I had a hard time picking up what was going on with the pro style of offense. Eventually, you know, it just took some time. And then I became, a very avid student of the game and learned once again how to study tape, how to retain formations, what they meant, who's likely to carry the ball, where are receivers located, what are the splits of the wide receivers, blah, blah, blah. All those things I came to truly enjoy learning and preparing for games. And eventually, after Dick Vermeil came in to our organization and he hired Marianne Campbell as our defense coordinator, I became the sacred call and thoroughly enjoyed doing that. And we were number one in the NFL in defense for like two or three years in a row, 78, 79, 80, 81. And in part because I knew what to call. I knew what to do. I knew how to get the defense lined up and enjoy it. Enjoyed very much being that, having that responsibility and, you know, not being the star football player, but being a big part of our success.
I'm curious, playing in a collegiate defense that is, you know, designed to stop the option, did that make it almost more difficult, the transition? Because you're not just learning, you know, the pro style defense, but you have to unlearn so many things that had become reflexive, I'm sure, for you. Did that make the transition even harder because, like I said, you had to kind of go backwards before you went forwards?
There's no doubt about that. I had to, as you say, unlearn. I had to learn mostly about the style of offense in the NFL at that time. You know, today's world, I probably wouldn't even get a chance to get out there and play because I was a 4.8 guy, was not a 4.4 or 4.5 or 4.6 40 guy. I was a 4.8 guy. And I had to, you know, everything I had to get to the point of attack by my head mostly. So, you know, I'll tell you a quick funny story. We go down to play the Super Bowl 1980 season, 1981 in January or whatever it was. And Dick Vermeil had one of the longest practices we ever had on Friday before the Super Bowl. And he put in a couple new plays, a couple trick plays. And here comes Ron Jaworski down the line of scrimmage in practice. I'm out there as the scout team linebacker. He's running an option. And he comes down the line, and I see it's option football, and I play off the quarterback, and then he lateraled the ball to the running back, Wilbert Montgomery, and I went over to tackle Wilbert Montgomery. So and it never left me. That idea of what your responsibility is on option football never left. But believe me, the offenses were very, very different in the NFL. I had to relearn everything. It took a while, but once I did, it was a lot of fun.
Do you remember the moment when it clicked at the NFL? Like, was there a practice, a meeting, a game where all of a sudden you did something as reflexively as you had done in college defending the option and you were like, oh, okay, now I'm starting to see it. Do you remember an aha moment or was it just gradual hard work and little by little?
I would say it was gradual hard work. And fortunately, once again, Eddie Kayat was fired. Mike McCormick came in as the head coach. Walt Michaels, longtime linebacker in the league, longtime defensive coordinator, head coach a couple different times, was our defensive coordinator and the linebacker coach. Very, very tough individual. And because of his tutelage, I think I was able to gain quicker knowledge, gain an advantage over others, particularly the guys that I'm competing with to be a starter. But you know, to be able to play physical and be mentally sharp enough to compete. So Walt Michaels saw in me a competitor, and I was able to play the weak side position, which was always to the open side away from the tight end, which I didn't like as much. So that when Marion Campbell took over as a defensive coordinator in 1977 with Dick Vermeil and his group of coaches, I got switched to left outside linebacker. So I saw a lot of tight ends. I love to play over a tight end. I enjoyed it. And our defense was set up so that take the tight end out of the game. Don't let him block down on the inside linebacker. Don't let him free release into the secondary. And I was really good at it. I was very good at holding up the tight end, and that was my primary focus over the next few years under Marion Campbell and the Philadelphia Eagles.
So, as you mentioned, your first few years, you have a couple of different coaches, head coaches. In 76, Dick Vermeil arrives. Do you remember your initial impressions of Dick Vermeil when he first took over?
First of all, he's unheard of because he's coaching at UCLA. He's out on the West Coast. Hardly any of us ever watch football out there. And to this day, a lot of people don't watch West Coast football because it's on too late. So I didn't know different. But when I first met him, he made a strong impression. And I think most people that get to meet him for the first time have one of the same type of thoughts. This guy's genuine. This guy is honest. This guy doesn't fool around. This guy is all about football, and he is about putting the right people on the bus and getting them into the right seats. He is a master of communication. He made a giant impression upon me right away. Now, when we got to training camp, that was another story. Another quick story here. We go into camp July 3rd, 1976, and we're in a meeting. Coach is having a meeting there, and all of a sudden, we hear all the noise outside, and Coach Vermeil tells Carl Peterson, "Hey, Carl, we can't conduct a meeting here. Go outside, find out what that racket's all about." So Carl leaves the classroom and comes back in. He goes, "Hey, Coach, I guess it has something to do that we're celebrating the bicentennial tonight, July 4th. I don't think we're going to get the fireworks to stop." So that's the kind of guy that Dick Vermeil was. He was so freaking focused that it completely blew his mind that the people would be out celebrating the bicentennial on July 4th, 1976. We had 2 days all the way up till the beginning of the season. We went in full pads every single practice. We never took our pads off except for occasionally on a Saturday before a Sunday game. He might let us take the pads, the uppers off. But we always had those helmets on. He was, he had an approach. He had a plan. And he executed it, and we changed a lot of players. We didn't have any draft picks. I mean, the Eagles had traded away two first rounders for Roman Gabriel, two first rounders for Bill Berge. So we never had a draft pick until the third or fourth round of 1977 when they drafted Reggie Wilkes out of Georgia Tech. So he did it. He did it with smoke and mirrors for a couple, 3 years, but we kept getting better. And the one thing, Matt, that I will always, always remember about Coach Vermeil, and it's something that I carried with me, it's about character. You know, it's hard to win with a bunch of jerks on your team. It really is. So I always carry that with me wherever I coached, and I wanted to have players that were good people or team players, because football is the ultimate team sport. Everybody knows that. There's so many pieces that have to work together, and that was one of the things that was kind of fun about both being a player and then later a coach is to work all those intangibles out to have success.
So those Vermeil years, it really is interesting. It was this slow build, better and better every year. Do you remember, is there a game where you felt like you guys turned the corner and really bright days were ahead? It might have been a loss, but just you could just see the personnel, the buy-in, the talent level that, yeah, we're on our way.
I'll tell you another quick story. We start the season in 1978 with two losses, two hard felt and tough losses. But I had gained confidence through training camp. I gained confidence through the preseason. I gained confidence that we had a good football team. We really did. You know, Ron Jaworski at quarterback. Our offensive line is full of guys that are going to eventually go to the Pro Bowl. And I called Dick Vermeil on Tuesday following our Monday meeting and our second loss in a row. And I got him on the phone. I said, "Coach, I want to let you know, we're going to be good. We just need to win some games. We need to win like three games in a row. We're going to take off." And he came back with, "John, I'm trying to win one game. Run one game in a row." "No, coach, we need three." Well, we went on a little bit of a tear. We won the following week. I'm trying to think of who that was against, because most of the stuff I've talked with about so many times, I can remember it. But let's just say it was Baltimore. Then we beat the Dolphins, who were the number one offense in the NFL at the time. We just dominated them. And then the next week we went to the play in Boston against the Patriots, and that's 1978. And somewhere in the third quarter, I tore up my knee. So I went out. I was having the best season I've ever had. I was playing on a team that I knew was going to win some football games, and I'm out. And I'm diagnosed with ACL tear, lateral meniscus tear. Given a 50-50 chance, the surgeon that operated on me, Dr. Vincent Stefano, God bless him, he had never performed this type of surgery on a professional athlete before. So I was given a 50-50 chance to ever play again. Well, that wasn't going to happen. I got to play. I was having a great year, and now I'm down and out, and we have a winning season. We go to Atlanta to play in the playoffs, lose that game, a tough loss, but I spent the next, 6-7 months in rehab with my trainer, Otho Davis, and Ron O'Neill, who was really the technical guy that I worked with. And I busted my ass to get back and play. And, when we went into preseason that year, 79, I wasn't allowed to practice. I wasn't allowed to go to meetings. I could see my teammates at lunchtime, breakfast time, dinner time. Otherwise, I didn't see it. I didn't even go on the field. I went with Ron O'Neill. We went to separate fields to train, to get me ready. Finally, the last preseason game, we're down in Miami playing against the Dolphins. And, Dick Vermeil's already talked to me about perhaps putting me on injured reserve and coming back in a month, because they just started that new rule where you can come back in a month. And I said, I want to suit up tonight. And he allowed me to do that. I played okay. We come back. He says to me again, "I think I'm going to put you on IR. I said, "Coach, you can't do it. I need to play. I need to play now." And he says, I saw you limping around some out there on the field. I said, "Not when I was playing, maybe in between." And he allowed me to play and start the opener against the Giants. And I got a picture of me and Ron O'Neill on the sideline prior to the game. So thankful for that man. And I came back and played every game. And, went on to get better the next year, because there was a lot of tape involved, taping that knee up, making it go out there and play. Had success, and we won another game in 79. And we won the first playoff game. Went down, I think, to Tampa and got beat by the Bucs. And next year we came back and went to the Super Bowl.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with former Eagles linebacker John Bunting right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you, so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you, and everyone on your list, at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores or DSW.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
And we are back. Our guest this week, John Bunting, longtime former Eagles linebacker, also was the head coach at Division III Rowan University down in Glassboro. What was the, you talked about, you know, you're on a separate field and all, but, you know, ACL surgeries these days are pretty common. And, you know, I think you mentioned the surgeon first time he'd done it. How much of the rehab was, I don't want to say guesswork, but, well, we think this is best practice? Because I'm guessing there really wasn't a playbook at that point, no?
Absolutely. I mean, the 6 weeks in a full cast, full leg cast, from my basically my hip all the way down to my toes, 6 weeks on crutches, 6 more weeks not putting any weight on it. Finally, the cast comes off. Ron was a very, very smart guy. We had pain days where we were breaking down the scar tissue, where I'd lay on my belly and he would jam that leg and knee and bend that knee up to my butt, with my foot to my butt. And it was painful and it was scary because I wasn't even allowed to run until the 1st of May. So just think, I've been in a cast since October. I have not been able to walk without crutches or walk at all after that. So it was painful, and it was a little scary. I just told everybody around me that I'm going to do it. It's going to happen. I just don't know when.
You obviously came back and played at a high level, but were you the same type of player? Did you have to change your game to have the same level of success?
I would say after that season in 79, when I was still, you know, I must have gone through, you know, a ton of ice. You know, I take an ice bag to bed, put it on my knee, and by the time it was 2 o'clock in the morning, it was hot water. So I would change. I had a cooler next to the bed so I could change ice bags. So I was a very devoted, I would say, a disciple of Ron O'Neill and what he thought I needed to do. I would say that I was back to about full speed in 80, the 80 season. I still had to ice down after practice every day, but I was running as well as I ever had run. So I was able to maneuver. I was able to cut. I was able to break down. I was able to make tackles. I was able to, you know, knock balls down. Everything was the same after the 79 season.
So let's talk about 80. You mentioned the story about the practice before the Super Bowl, but take me leading into that season. You guys had made the playoffs the last 2 years. You mentioned you had won a playoff game the year before against Chicago, battled a really good Tampa team in the divisional playoffs. Are you coming into 80 thinking we are an elite team and we should go to the Super Bowl?
I don't think we were thinking Super Bowl, but we certainly were thinking we had a lot of confidence. You know, when you have players like Keith Kreftley and, you know, Jerry Sizemore, Stan Walters, Guy Morris, God bless him, and Wilbert Montgomery, Harold Carmichael, I just attended his Hall of Fame induction a few weeks ago. We had some really good players. And defensively, we were playing at a really high level. We could shut people down. We were a basic fundamental football defense. We didn't play a lot of special coverages. We played 3-deep zone, and we played a little bit of 2-deep zone. And Marion Campbell gave me a lot of leverage to change our front, change a coverage based on formation personnel, and what changes may happen. I mean, at that point in time, when tight ends go in motion or wide receiver, it changes the strength. So you got to adjust. I enjoyed that. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And our defense really responded. We liked to think that we were really good at linebacker, but we had a great defensive front. Dennis Bigfoot Harrison, Claude Humphrey was a pass rushing specialist. Charlie Johnson was a tremendous nose tackle. His backup, Kenny Clark, who I also saw out there at the induction of Harold. Carl Harrison, one of my greatest friends and a guy I've coached with many, many times, was our right defensive end. These guys were really, really good. I mean, they would take offensive lines apart. And us linebackers, we just had to, you know, stay on the line of scrimmage and make tackles. Frank LeMaster, good player. Jerry Robbins, outstanding player. I mean, the Eagles draft two linebackers. When they finally get a draft pick, they are drafting Reggie Wilkes out of Georgia Tech, who is a beautiful guy, beautiful player. I got to beat him out. And then they draft Jerry Robinson, number one. I got to beat him out. So I was always under pressure to be the starter. Was I lucky? Yeah, probably some. Was I good enough? Yeah, but was I the signal caller? That was a big part of it. They respected that. Marion, Dick Vermeil, they all respected that. They knew that I cared so much about being right on my calls and audibles, checks. They depended upon me, and that was fun. That was very, very, very much fun.
See you guys in 80. You win the East, 12-4, home field advantage. Everybody remembers, and it's such a special game. It's ingrained on Philadelphia sports history, the win over Dallas to go to the Super Bowl. A lot of people forget the divisional game against Minnesota, and you guys came out and were actually down 14-0 at home to the Vikings, and there's a chance this whole dream could go sideways. Take me inside that game. You guys ended up winning, going away, and I think you forced like 8 turnovers defensively, but you're in a 14-0 hole in that first playoff game. What was, you know, kind of take me inside that one.
Well, it wasn't by accident that we got down. I guess it was 14-0. I don't know if we had a turnover, but Minnesota got us in a couple binds and made some plays. What I remember most about when we got down 14-0, whatever it was, Marion Campbell comes over to the defense as he normally would do in between our battles out there on the field, and we're on the sideline. And he read us the riot act. He was a very quiet guy. I would say for the most part, very peaceful. He went out of his mind, and I think it really shook us up, got our attention, and we went back out there and started playing Eagle defense again. So that, I think that's the big thing there to that I remember about that game, because we were down, and it wasn't good. And everything that we had accomplished was going to be gone, you know, in the next, you know, hour and a half if we don't get things together. So we got it together, and we went out, scored some points, and as you say, I think we got a number of turnovers in the second half.
So then the Dallas game that I mentioned earlier, what was the lead up to that one like? I mean, they're the only thing standing between you and the Super Bowl. It's Dallas. They're obviously, they've been a dynasty for a decade. What was it like leading into that one?
I would say that our practice sessions were high quality, tremendous enthusiasm. Dick did a really, really smart thing with the team. In when we were in the playoffs, we would fly to Tampa and practice down there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then fly back to Philly to practice on Friday. So Dick gave us a lot of freedom down there on those days. So us players, we would go out to dinner together. We practiced in the sunshine and the heat together. We gained a lot of confidence down there together. We were back in training camp without all the extra meetings and this, that, and the other, just having a good time, just having a great time together. We had a tremendous team chemistry with that football team. So when we flew back to play in Philly, most of us remember that it was sub-zero degrees out there on that frozen turf. And we knew that Dallas wouldn't like it. We also forced them to wear their blue jerseys, which for some reason they hated doing. So we felt like everything was lining up. And I can just tell you that in the locker room prior to going out and playing that game, I don't know if it was a 4 o'clock game or what it was, but we were jacked. We were let us out of the cage. We want to go out there and beat these guys. We want to beat their ass. And, you know, the Dallas thing will never end between Philly and Dallas. And you know, the Giants, we have a rivalry with them. The Washington football team, formerly known as the Redskins, we have a rivalry with them. But the Cowboys, we can't stand them. And to this day, the Sizemores and the Billy Bradleys and the Tom Lukens and the Franklin Masters, we text message one another. We usually end up with our text messages, Dallas still sucks. You know, that's how we felt. And, you know, it was, and I, after the game, I have a great picture. Vermeil's in the middle, Berge's on one side, I'm on the other side. And I spoke to him. I said, I told you we were going to kick their ass. And he kind of smiled and laughed it off. But there was nothing was going to stop us that day. And the only thing that stopped us from leaving the field was the police on the horses. I'll never forget that too. End of the game. They come out of the horses with the horses. And that is so intimidating. Let's go inside. We celebrated enough out here. Let's go inside and celebrate with our team. So it was an experience of none other. My favorite game of all my career that I ever played in. And so it was a lot of fun.
The weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, was there a moment where things felt off? Because there's been a lot of talk over the years. Eagles were tight, Raiders were loose, and you could feel it in the air. As part of that team, did you feel like you were doing things differently? Did it feel like you were out of routine? You know, was there anything that you look back on and you go, yeah, we just weren't in the right spot or whatever?
Well, I've said it probably many times, and Dick doesn't like to hear it, but we did. We got off routine. We had the first week up there in Philly, practicing in the cold. Didn't go back down to Tampa. We stayed there, but that's okay. We're going home, this, that, and the other. We get down to New Orleans and things change. We've got night meetings. We're back in training camp is what it was. And long practices. The Friday practice before the Super Bowl is the longest one I ever remember being part of. And my roommate is Louis Giamona, Dick Vermeil's nephew, our special teams captain. Fiercest football player I've ever known in my entire life. And I will be visiting him sometime in December. I'm going to go down to Key West and spend some time with him. We both wake up that Sunday morning and I said, hey, how do you feel? He goes, I feel like crap. How do you feel? I feel the same. We were mentally worn out more than anything else because we had the night meetings. We had gotten together in Tampa. We were going out with the players to have dinner and having a great time, blah, blah, blah. Back to bed, get up the next day, practice and go to a meeting and then go out to dinner again. Everything was different. And I think that we were a team that was very tight. And when you're tired and you're tight, it makes things even worse. We didn't play well defensively. We did not play. Offensively, we had some turnovers. We had a couple plays called back. It just wasn't our day. And I'll never forget the locker room after that. I just sat on a chair in a shower, just cried my eyes out for a long, long time. And I went back out on the field. Another quick story here. And I'm still upset and very dejected. And my whole family's down there. My daughter's crying. My son, my wife is crying. Her family's crying. My family's crying. And I just finished crying, so I'm done crying. I look over the end zone. My son is laying in the end zone at the Superdome with the program out, and he's scratching the faces out of the Oakland Raiders with a pen. And I just had to laugh my butt off. And to this day, it turned things around for me, and my son did a great job. So that was a difficult time. We all flew back the next day. It was a very, very dejected football team, and nobody pointed any fingers. We weren't that kind of team. We all just suffered in silence for the most part.
One of the things I was interested, I didn't realize this, you spent, during the heart of your career, you were the NFLPA player rep for the Eagles, correct?
Dick asked me to do it in 1977, so I did it, I enjoyed that responsibility, of course, the 82 strike, we're out 57 days, we come back off strike, playing the Cincinnati Bengals. Dick thinks that it would be a good idea if he names me captain. game captain for that game. So I got a picture of me and Giamona and Guy Morris and Carl Harrison out there for the coin flip. It hangs in my house. It was a proud moment. And then he thought it would be a great idea to introduce the defense. So, you know, I'm the fourth guy to be introduced. The first three defensive linemen get out there. I'm the fourth guy getting introduced. And 70,000 people got on their feet and booed my butt. And I wasn't surprised, but a little disappointed, I guess. But, you know, that it goes with the flow. I mean, if you're – I took football away from the Philadelphia fans for 57 days. You know, we lost to the Bengals. I don't know what the score was, but it wasn't a run. It was like 17 to 12 or something like that. You know, we didn't play as well as we had in the previous year, but we had a ton of close games, and you got to win those close games. And that's what it's still the same way in the NFL. You watch any NFL game, you know, there's not too many who Buffalo beat 40, the Texans beat the Texans 40 to nothing last week. You don't have many of those games. They're down to the last minute or two in a field goal can win it. So we had a lot of those games, but we didn't win them. And of course, then Dick retires. He's disappointed in the strike year. He's disappointed in the season. He needs some time away. And 3 weeks later, headlines of the Philadelphia Inquirer, Giamona Bunning axed. We're on the front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer. And I often tell Dick, you know, when Dick retired after the days with the Rams, after we won the Super Bowl, you know, we won the Super Bowl on a Sunday. On Monday, we had the parade. Tuesday, he retires. Wednesday, Mike Martz is named coach. Thursday, I congratulate Mike Martz. He comes down to my office and goes, I don't believe in co-coordinators. If I want to kick somebody in the ass, I want to go down to one office, you're fired. So every time Dick retires, I get fired. So that's that.
After 82, you mentioned, you know, you get cut by the Eagles. You end up in the USFL. You stay in Philadelphia, play with the Stars. What's the USFL? It was a fun league. There was a lot of talent in that league. It deserved a much better fate, and that's a whole different story for a different time. But what was it like for you at that point in your career to be in an upstart league like the USFL?
Well, you know, Carl Peterson being the president of the Stars and knowing what my contributions were to the Philadelphia Eagles over those years that he was there as player personnel director, he asked that I come and play. I'm 32 years old. The average age of the rest of that team on the Stars is probably 23, 24. So I added a little bit of a smarter, more experienced head to that defense. Jim Mora, very much like Coach Romeo, really, really disciplined, tough coach. He had a great staff. Every one of those guys coached for years afterwards, the John Pieses and the Vince Tobins and, just so many, Jim Erkenbach, those guys were great coaches. So we had a good staff. We had some great players, starting with Kelvin Bryant, another Tar Heel, good offensive line. That's where it all starts. Reminded me of the Philadelphia Eagles with their great offensive lines. Defense, you know, playing with Sam Mills, I just had a ball. I've just come out of, played 9 games, I guess it was, and then I played 15, 16 more. So my knee was it held up. We went to the championship game out in Denver and got beat by the Michigan Panthers. But the next day year, we won. We were 19-2. We won all the time. Our two losses were to the Generals, and we knocked them off in the playoffs. So I had a blast playing. It was like I was just given a second chance. I was given borrowed time, time that I didn't deserve. But I played, and sure enough, July 15th, 1984, I'm playing in the championship game against the Arizona Wranglers and George Allen. We win, and I'm 34 years old that day. That was my birthday. We beat them on my birthday, and I was thrilled and knew that it was probably my last game.
Yeah, that was it just you felt the body, it was just time?
It was time. I had, in the beginning of the season, I had a partially torn Achilles tendon, sat out a couple weeks with that. And when I got down to practice, I think it was because of the sandy soil down there in the Tampa area, I restrained it. So, you know, I took a shot of cortisone in my Achilles on like Thursday when I strained it again. And then on Saturday night or Sunday, whenever we played, took another shot pregame, another shot at halftime. So I couldn't walk for like 6 weeks afterwards. So I knew it was the end. I was getting too old to play.
Did you always figure on coaching? Because I know you didn't. You start the next year. I mean, the Stars move to Baltimore, and you start coaching then. Was that something you pursued? Somebody comes to you? Had you always thought about coaching? Where did coaching fit in your mindset?
I had too many crummy coaches. I didn't want to coach. I didn't want to be exposed. But the Stars staff was special. And as a matter of fact, they made a mistake in my contract. This is nobody hardly even knows this, but they had renewed my contract, which was paying me $160,000. I said, you know what? Maybe I should play. Well, I got down to Florida where we had training camp and they wouldn't let me practice. So I walked around with a helmet and a jersey for about 3 weeks before finally Jim Mora had a long talk with me and said, listen, how would you like to coach your replacement, George Jamison, out of the University of Cincinnati? I said, he's a great guy. I'd love to do it. So I jumped on. Jim Mora offered me the job. I took the job, and I had a ball coaching the linebackers. Mike Johnson, who had gotten into the doghouse with Vince Tobin, he became a starter, became a all-pro linebacker for the Cleveland Browns later on. So I enjoyed that part. And when the league folded, of course, Jim Mora went to New Orleans. I, at the time, was going through a divorce, got two kids. I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving Philadelphia. So I stayed behind. He went, and we thought that the Stars might become coached by the old coach from the Baltimore Colts, Ted Marchibroda. So I had been in touch with him, possibly could work something out, but the league folded. So I kind of tooled around with radio, TV, worked for KYW, I did Temple football for Bruce Arians that next year. And at the same time, I was asked by Ted Kirshner, the head football coach at Glassboro, if I could coach the defensive line during the week, don't have to be there for games. So I did that as well. Finished that year, really enjoyed coaching, really enjoyed the players. Once again, they are playing because they love the game. The coaches are coaching because they love the game, because they're not making any money doing it. Ted Kirshner resigns, becomes the athletic director at Glassboro, and the president of Glassboro, Herman James, great guy, great man. He wants to have a full-time coach. He wants to have a full-time coach that devotes all his time into football, because football starts school year off every year. He wants to have some more wins. So got the job, and the rest is history.
That's 88. You have a great run at Glassboro State / Rowan. You lead them to the playoffs first time in 91. You go to the Final Four in 92. How much fun is it building a program like that and putting the pieces in place and seeing the progression and being the architect of it and having this success?
Once again, I had some great mentors. You know, Dick Vermeil, I had Jim Mora, great mentors. I had one full-time coach, Casey Keeler, who took the job when I left to go to Kansas City. And he had some tremendous success and still coaching out there out there in Texas someplace.
Sam Houston State, I believe.
Sam Houston State, that's correct. So, you know, I took a lot of the stuff that I had learned from those mentors and put that to work for me. We ran we ran our team like was a pro team. We had pro practices. I never practiced in the heat. I didn't want to do that. I had a teammate of mine die in the heat my senior year at North Carolina. So I made sure that I practiced the players. I practiced them hard, but we never went out in the heat. And we had success. We had a great quarterback, Eddie Hessen. We had some great players. Casey Keeler was the ideal recruiter, particularly of the transfer player. We had a lot of players left. New Jersey's got a lot of good football. And they would go to the Nebraskas and to the Oklahomas and to the Michigans. And some of them were unhappy and came home. We scooped them up. They played for us. And they were, and we got better. But mostly we played as a team. I remember one of the first t-shirts I ever had created was that it's a team thing. And that's what football is all about. It's a team thing. And our players responded to that. And we Montclair was the team you had to beat, and we ended up beating them the last couple of years we played them. It was just a lot of fun. And I have to say this, that's where I met my wife too, my second and final wife. She was coaching basketball and softball there, I had to be introduced at a physical education meeting as the new head coach. And this girl got up and just started jabbering about me being a full-time coach, not having to teach class, not having to coach another sport. And as I was walking back with Casey Keeler to our field house, I said, "Who is that girl that got up and made a fool out of herself?" He goes, "Oh, that's Dawn. You don't want to know her." Well, I ended up asking her to marry me 2 years later. So a lot of good things happened at Glassboro State for me.
So after you mentioned you went to Kansas City as an assistant, you talked about your time with the Rams. You win, you're part of the staff that wins the Super Bowl with Dick Vermeil with the Rams. And I'm curious, you get to the Super Bowl with the Eagles as a player. You win the USFL championship with the Stars as a player. You win a Super Bowl as a coach with the Rams. Does it hit differently when you reach that level as a player as it does with a coach? Is one maybe not more satisfying, but is it a different satisfaction?
Yeah, it's different. It's definitely different. Once again, I don't get on text message groups with my former players or go out and visit with them in Canton to honor Harold Carmichael. Or many years, we were always come back for Dick Vermeil's golf tournament in June. Those things don't happen, but it's relationships. It's just the relationships that you had as a player. There's nothing better than it. In my opinion, you can't get it from coaching. It's a different deal. As much as I still have relationships with other coaches, the players, those are the guys that I respond to. And I Coach Vermeil, I love him to death. He never calls me coach. He always calls me John. I think I'll always be a player to him. And you know what? That's good. That's real, real good.
John Bunting, thanks so much for taking the time. This was a blast.
Had a good time, Matt, and I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank former Eagles linebacker and former Rowan University head football coach John Bunting for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, you could help us out by leaving a rating and a review. Now, you can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Deck your home with Blinds.com. DIY or let us install. Free design consultation. Plus free samples and free shipping.
Ho, ho, ho! Blinds.com invented a better way to buy custom high-quality window treatments with no showroom mock-ups or waiting around for quotes from pushy salespeople, saving you time and money for the holidays with upfront pricing right on our website.
Go right now to Blinds.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Satisfaction guaranteed.
Head to Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Blinds.com.
La, 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 Blinds.com.
Rules and restrictions may apply.